This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back, everybody, to the People Who Speak radio show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Who Speak show normally airs every Tuesday from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the United States and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of Pal Talk, the largest free chat program in the world, where we're having a virtual radio room, the People Who Speak radio show, that anyone may join to participate in the show. This is a fantastic show tonight. We're talking to a very special guest right here, a former bodybuilder and CPA accountant. Today, in 2015, Mr. Ty Bollinger is more widely known as the author of the best-selling book on cancer, Cancer Step Outside the Box, a book which I consider is the encyclopedia of alternative cancer treatments. A very big warm welcome to the show, Mr. Ty Bollinger, sir.
Steve, great to be on the show with you, my friend. It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. I believe I spoke to you in an interview and got to know you about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. It's fantastic to hear your voice. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I am. And you're right. It was about 6 years ago. I think it was 2000. Actually, I think it may have actually been 2008 that we first met. But, wow, time flies, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour of the show, but my first question to you, Ty, is how long have you actually been researching alternative cancer treatments, and how did you get started?
Yeah, I began to research natural treatments for cancer back in 1996 when my father was diagnosed for cancer. He died 25 days after diagnosis. We found out later that he really did not die from the cancer surgery that they botched. It was, you know, it happens. That's the protocol they use. Surgery is traumatic to the body, and he never recovered from the surgery. But I began to research at that time, and over the course of several years after that, about 7 years, I actually lost the rest of my family, my both grandmoms, both grandfathers, uncle, cousin, and finally my mother to cancer. And at that point, I figured that I needed to put all of this research that I've been doing over the years into a book form, and that's when I published my book, Cancer Step Outside the Box, in 2006, which was a few years after my mother had died.
So the journey for you was a personal one, having suffered so much at the hands of what we call the big three, the slash and burn. Can you just go through what the big three are in pharmaceutical terms?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you're right, Steve. It is a personal journey to me and my family, and you know, I guess it would be to anybody that had lost their whole entire family to surgery or to chemo or to radiation. And the reason I say that, the big three, the cut, poison, and burn, the surgery, the chemotherapy, the radiation protocol, That's what people call the big three. They're so toxic that many times, and in my family's situations, that it's no different. Many times, the cancer patients actually don't die from cancer; they die from the treatment for the cancer. And that happened almost across the board with my family.
More recently, you've spoken at quite a few conferences. What has that been like for you? And what has some of the latest news and findings been released in cancer research?
Yeah, you know, I have, Steve. Over the last several years, I've been speaking quite a bit. I've been speaking at cancer conferences and health expos across the United States, and just getting a chance to share my story, and not only that, but really to talk about solutions to this pandemic, because cancer really is a pandemic. It's a, you know, according to the World Health Organization just a few years ago, 1 in 2 men are alive today, 1 in 3 women that are alive will face cancer. So it's not an exaggeration to say that this is a pandemic, and I'm trying to help shed some light on this dark subject and to educate people so that if they are one of those 41% of people alive that face a diagnosis, they'll have a clue about what they should do. You see, the problem that I have, Steve, and I know that you share this with me, is that people go in and they're diagnosed with cancer immediately. They're told, they're scared into submission, for lack of a better term, from the oncologist. They're told, look, you're going to die in 3 or 6 months if you don't do our treatment. So we got to start you tomorrow on chemotherapy after we cut it out tonight, and then we're going to do a you know, radiation after that just to make sure. And before you know it, there's this whirlwind of emotion. You are swept into this treatment protocol, and that's really your only choices if you have not educated yourself ahead of time. And so, you know, that's really my purpose, my mission now is to educate people that they do have options, that cancer doesn't have to be a death sentence, that you don't have to go in for chemo, radiation, and surgery, that there are other options. And then, you know, let the person decide for themselves instead of being, you know, forced into it. And that's the real issue that I have today, Steve, is across these United States, we're seeing story after story of children and adults, but many children are being forced into these treatments that don't have a proven track record, that don't work very well with cancer, that actually create secondary cancers. It says it on the package inserts for these chemo drugs, but they're still forced to do these treatments. I just interviewed 2 weeks ago. I flew down to Austin, Texas, and I interviewed a girl, a young lady, 17-year-old named Cassandra. You've probably read about her story. She was known as Cassandra C., and she was in Massachusetts, diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma last year. She did not want to do the treatment. Her mother did not want her to do the chemotherapy treatment. They wanted to go with natural treatments. But the CPS, the Child Protective Services in Connecticut. The Child Protective Services Agency there is actually called a DCF. They came to her house, kidnapped her with the help of the local police, took her in, strapped her to a gurney, and put a port in her and forced chemotherapy against her wishes for 5 months. Every day that she received the chemo, she said, "I do not consent. I do not consent." But they thought they knew best. And for 5 months, she was medically raped and basically assaulted by the medical system. 5 months of chemo that she did not want to have in her body because she thought there were better ways. And there are better ways. And sadly, in this situation, Cassandra, I'm keeping up with her now. She just recently did a PET scan, and they're saying that they think the cancer might be back. And so here's a girl that was kidnapped, medically raped, assaulted, forced to do a treatment against her wishes. And now, not only did all that happen to her, but the treatment that she was forced to do didn't work. I mean, what a horrible situation of a medical mafia that we have here in the United States when this is occurring not just this once, but over and over and over.
And, of course, Child Protective Services have turned kitty snatching into a huge industry today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are the child kidnappers. And, you know, it's not the purview of this interview here, but they're pedophiles as well. And that could be a whole other subject. And they sell children, too. That's just outside the realm of what we're talking about. But it's disgusting what's happening today under Child Protective Services.
What has the reception been like from other people at these cancer conventions? Have they greeted you warmly with your information and your research?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I've had a huge positive response. People really, they're hungry for this information, Steve. The truth resonates with people, and they realize that they've been hoodwinked, and they're sick of it, and they want to know the truth. And the truth is there's a lot of different things that you can do naturally to treat cancer, and you don't have to go with the big three treatments. And that's part of the big lie that people have been told, is that they have to do the big three treatments, otherwise they're going to die. And the reality is we go back to 1953 with the Fitzgerald report, and, you know, people that are listening to the show might say, well, you know, that sounds like kind of conspiratorial to me, that there's natural treatments for cancer, you know, that these treatments are being suppressed by the medical industrial complex. Well, if you go back to 1953, call the Fitzgerald report, that was the United States Senate Investigatory Committee. They were convened to answer one question, and that question was, is there an active conspiracy in the United States to suppress natural cancer treatments? And the conclusion was yes. That was 1953. Yeah. That was the United States Senate. It's not just me. It was the Senate 60 years ago that said that.
A lot of people would like to know, have any of the treatments in your book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box, have any of those treatments actually cured anyone of cancer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, in Cancer, Step Outside the Box, I highlight the 20 most effective treatments that I've seen for cancer in my research. But, yeah, I mean, how many people have been cured from those treatments? I mean, I've lost count. I mean, I know personally dozens of people that have used each of the treatments that are outlined in my book that have contacted me since I wrote the book and have said, you know, I was diagnosed as terminal, now I'm cancer-free. You know, I probably could go through my emails and find 500 to 1,000 patients over the last 10 years that have contacted me. And that's just a small sampling of the total people that are out there. That's just people that have contacted me. I mean, I would venture to say that there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people alive today because they've used these natural cancer treatments. I don't like to use the term alternative for the treatment, Steve, and here's why. Alternative seems to me, the definition of alternative is something that is not norm, but it's something that should be used kind of as in a last-ditch resort. But the fact of the matter is that these natural treatments for cancer have been around for millennia. And the fact of the matter is that chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, well, surgery's been around a little bit longer, but radiation therapy and chemotherapy to treat cancer have only been around since the 1940s. So we're talking about 70 years. I would venture to say that those should be what's called alternative treatments, and the natural treatments, the homeopathic treatments, and the herbal treatments, and the chiropractic, and the naturopathy, and all of these things that we think today as quackery, they're actually the real treatments. They should be the mainstream treatments, and the chemo and radiation and surgery should be the alternatives.
I'm going to throw some things out here and see what sort of response I get. How about B17 and apricot and apple seeds? Don't they both contain some kind of arsenic?
They do. Yeah, they actually contain cyanide, hydrogen cyanide. That's B17, also known as Laetril, also known as amygdalin. That's a treatment that was popularized in the 1950s by Doctors Ernst Krebs and his son, G. Edward Griffin, who wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island, also wrote a book called World Without Cancer, and he detailed the story of the Hunza Indians in northern Pakistan that have a diet that's heavy in apricot seeds, which are high in B17, and they never get cancer. And the reason is the way that the B17 molecule is put together, you've got one part cyanide, one part benzaldehyde, and two parts glucose or sugar. But they're not the poisons are not dangerous until they're unlocked. And the only thing that unlocks those in your body is an enzyme called beta-glucosidase that's present only at cancer cells, and it unlocks the hydrogen cyanide and the benzaldehyde, and it makes a very potent poison. And then the rest of your body produces an enzyme called proteinase, and the proteinase is poison, and the rest of your body. So it's really amazing. That's one of the treatments I did speak about in my book. I had the privilege of interviewing in person Jason Vail, who, if people have heard of Jason Vail, he was on Extra TV show about 18, 20 years ago in the mid-90s as a professional arm wrestler that had cured his terminal cancer by eating apple seeds and apricot seeds. And he was the first person that I actually learned about. Once Dad got sick, I found his story and began to read about these natural cancer treatments. So I had the privilege of interviewing Jason last year. And he was part of a documentary that I filmed last year, which is called The Truth About Cancer, The Quest for the Cures. And I was privileged to interview Jason about that, the apricot seeds, the B17. But not only that, but the persecution that he received because of selling them on his website. And believe it or not, Steve, he did 5 years in jail from 2003 to 2008 because he sold seeds on his website, because he violated some injunction from the Fear and Death Administration, also known as the FDA.
So that's really incredible information. You're saying that the hydrogen cyanide from these seeds that we eat in our body, it's basically inert. It can't attack the system until it comes into contact with cancer cells. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way cyanide typically is. It's a bound molecule typically with other molecules. The only time it's dangerous is if it becomes released or activated. And so it is inert, and it only becomes activated or released and becomes toxic at the cancer site. Nowhere else in the body. But see, the interesting thing is, Steve, and I'm glad you're asking these questions, because if people go to do a search on the internet and they look for B17 or apricot seeds or Laetril, they're going to find all of these hit piece articles that come up at the top of the searches, because of course those corporations control the search engines. But they're going to find these articles that, oh, you shouldn't eat them because you'll die of cyanide poisoning and so forth. Well, the fact of the matter is vitamin B12 also contains a molecule of cyanide. It's called cyanocobalamin. It contains cyanide, but nobody's talking about the fact that you shouldn't take vitamin B12, because every doctor injects with B12 for energy. But the reason that they don't is because B12 is not a competition with the pharmaceutical industry to treat cancer. B17 is, And that's why that molecule of cyanide gets lambasted on the internet, and that's why no one reads about vitamin B12 being dangerous, because it's not.
That's what sets you aside from all the other cancer researchers, Ty, and I love this stuff. You've done the research at a molecular level. You know what you're talking about at the molecule level. And that's what makes, that's what sets you aside from many, many other cancer researchers that I've found. You've looked into it, not only the obvious stuff, the herbal remedies and the stuff we should be taking that we have been taking for hundreds of thousands of years, but you've also looked into those other researchers that have done certain things, like Royal Raymond Rife. Can you tell us who this guy was?
Yeah, you know, Royal Raymond Rife is a prime example of a man that was far ahead of his time. He developed a microscope. He called it a beam ray microscope. He was able he was able to magnify things up to 60,000 times, which back in the 1930s and 40s was unheard of. And he was able to see changes in the blood. He called them pleomorphisms. But he was also able to determine that cancer cells have different frequencies than normal cells, and he was able to pulse those frequencies through the body, these resonating, they're not resonant frequencies. There's another term for it, and I lost the word, but they're frequencies that are just barely off the frequency of the cancer cells, and what it would do is basically agitate them and make them implode. It would kill the cancer cell. So Rife developed a frequency generator that was able to kill cancer cells. Now, this was a generator that was featured on the front page of the San Diego newspaper, the Los Angeles Times. There were medical conferences that were given in his honor. And then, you know, front page stories, you know, this scientist creates a frequency generator, kills cancer cells. Now, at that time, the head of the American Medical Association was a man named Morris Fishbein. Fishbein came and he wanted to buy Rife's technology from him, but Rife wasn't selling. So at that point, they went on a witch hunt. They began to harass Rife. I think the IRS even got involved. His office was broken into. Several people around Royal Raymond Rife died mysteriously. Several of his medical records were burned. Some of his books were burned, and Rife ended up dying in jail. Or after he went to jail for a while, they trumped up some charges against him. He got out of jail and ended up dying from a drug overdose. Because they basically wrecked his life. And the reason they wrecked his life is because he was curing cancer outside of this medical box that you're allowed to cure cancer in. And the powers that be, big pharmaceutical companies, the medical mafia, did not like it. So they ruined his life. And so that's the story of Royal Raymond Rife. The same thing happened to Harry Hoxsey, who was treating cancer in Dallas. He had 17 clinics across the country in the 1940s called the Hoxsey Clinic. They used an herbal tonic that his grandfather had developed when he realized that when horses got sick with cancer, they went out and chewed on certain herbs in the field, and they began to get better. He turned that into the Hoxsey tonic. As I mentioned, 17 clinics across the country. Harry Hoxsey was arrested over 100 times in Dallas for various charges that were basically trumped up and false in order to keep him from curing cancer patients. They finally had to leave the country and went down to Mexico. And so now that's called a biomedical center. It's in Tijuana, Mexico. But the same, you know, the persecution of these doctors that are curing cancer outside of the allowed treatments is just rampant. And that's just a couple of stories. I could spend the rest of the show talking about doctors that I have spoken to or that I'm aware of that have been run out of the country because they committed the crime of treating cancer and curing cancer naturally without chemo and radiation.
Now, in your own personal cancer journey, doing your research, have you ever spoken out about Big Pharma and the medical mafia? And was that part of your decision to escape from America?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I've been speaking out against Big Pharma and the medical mafia for the better part of 9 years now. And, you know, we've received death threats and all kinds of stuff when I first put the book out. After a while, I just said, you know what? I'm not going to be living in fear, which I did for a while. And I said, I'm going to just roll the dice. I'm going to go out there and speak the truth and just trust God to protect me because I think I'm on a mission that he wants me to be doing. And I think he wants me to be sharing this truth with people and helping the world. And so, you know, over the last several years, I don't worry about anything anymore. I just go out and speak the truth. Even though, you know, there are some strange things happening, Steve. I don't know if you've been following the story of I think over the last month, there's at least 8, maybe 10 natural doctors that have been either committed suicide or been found dead, or a couple of them have been ruled as murdered. Are you familiar with that story?
Yes, sir. I've heard about the story. I'm still not sure what to make of it, but I do know during the anthrax outbreak, a lot of microbiologists and virologists suddenly died. It seems to be the way when there's something like this happen, and when big companies start to influence things, scientists start dying. Is that not the case?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what's going on. You know, maybe it's all big one stinky hairy coincidence. I don't know. But the bottom line is that there are, over the past month, there's been about 8 or 10 natural doctors that have been found dead, committed suicide, been murdered, or whatever. So I don't know if they're connected, but it just sure is coincidence. It's a big coincidence if they're not related. But I don't have any information that tells me otherwise. But, you know, if something stinks, then there's probably rotten or dead fish somewhere. And in this case, something stinks.
Do you believe they would go to the extreme or to the extent of actually bumping doctors off in skiing accidents and things like that?
Absolutely, I do. Yeah, and they have in the past. And you mentioned, you know, the microbiologists that were, after 9/11, being found dead. You know, that's just the way they operate. You know, this is not a political discussion here per se, but, you know, if you look back at the Clinton body count, that's really indisputable at this point in time. You can go back and you can see the people that were associated with them that knew information that could have hurt them, and they were somehow found dead here or there, or committed suicide by shooting themselves twice in the head, or whatever weird circumstance might be. That's just the way that the elites operate. And so would it surprise me if the medical elites are doing this, if Big Pharma or somebody within the medical mafia is knocking off these doctors? No, it wouldn't. Do I have any proof that they're doing it, or do I have a reason to suspect them of doing it? No, I don't, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Absolutely. In your researched opinion, is there any evidence showing that cannabis or CBD-24, THC, has ever done anything to help anybody with any sort of medical problems? Is it, in your opinion, can it be a cure for cancer?
Well, yeah, and it's not just my opinion, Steve. It's every study that I've read over the last 40 years since 1974 was the first study that was done on cannabis at the behest of the DEA and the National Institutes of Health at the University of Virginia Medical School. And this is after Tricky Dick had declared a war on drugs and a war on cancer, and they figured that they were going to kill two birds with one stone here. You see, they wanted to determine that cannabis causes cancer, but to their dismay, the researchers at University of Virginia determined that cannabis actually was effective at treating three different types of cancer. So the DEA came in and they buried the study. We didn't learn about this for several years. But since that time, there have been dozens of studies that have shown that cannabis is effective at treating up to 12 different types of cancer. So it's very medicinal, which when it comes to cancer, and I can, you know, I've got several articles that you can go to my website, cancertruth.net, and thetruthaboutcancer.com, and you can read the articles I've written on hemp, on cannabis and cancer. I've got all of the links to the scientific studies to prove the fact that it's effective at treating 12 different types of cancer. So you can go there if you think that I'm full of hooey, because I'm not. There's actually studies that are published on PubMed that show that. But not only cancer, but, you know, we can look at epilepsy. Cannabis is very, very effective at treating epileptic seizures, very effective at Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease. For cancer patients that are in late stage that have entered into what's called a cachexia cycle, cannabis, if you smoke it or if you eat it when it's heated and it's got THC, it will create appetite in you, right? It's called the munchies. But it'll get patients out of that cachexia cycle where their body's wasting away. It helps with nausea and you know, just the general ill health that's associated when you're going under chemotherapy-type treatments. So those are just several of the medicinal effects that cancer has. But it's not only medicinal, it's also industrial. You know, the industrial hemp is good at clothing, making, you know, material for clothing. The first Model T, or one of the first Model Ts that Henry Ford built, was built on hemp fiber, and it ran on hemp fuel. Declaration of Independence, Constitution of the United States, drafted on hemp paper. I mean, there's 25,000-plus uses for the hemp plant, and many of them are medicinal, and that's why it's so ridiculous, Steve, that hemp, cannabis, or they call it marijuana, which I refuse to call it marijuana because that was a slang term that the DEA developed in the 1930s so that people would be afraid of a plant that grows naturally that's very effective at healing. But anyway, there's just so many different uses for this, and only I think this was an article back in the 1930s, 25,000 uses for the hemp plant, but I don't like to call it marijuana because that's really a slang term.
A lot of people will argue as well, hasn't the cancer industry actually cured a lot of people as well? Do they actually save more people than they cure? Do you have any stats on how safe the big three really is?
Well, no doubt that there are people that go through the big three treatments and they live and they survive flat past the 5-year mark, which is typically the way that we measure success. And I'm glad about that. I mean, anytime somebody gets cancer and they live, I'm happy. The percentage of people though is very small. When we look at a study that was done at Northern Sydney Cancer Centre down in Sydney, Australia, in the land of Oz, they looked at over 2,000 cancer patients. And no, I'm sorry, 20,000 cancer patients and 22 different types of cancer. So 20,000 patients, 22 different types of cancer. And they found that when we look at a 5-year survival rate, right, and that's the way we typically measure success, that the contribution of chemotherapy to 5-year survival rate is just 2.1% in Australia, 2.3% in the United States. So do people survive? Yeah. But, you know, when we're looking at the side effects of chemotherapy with the nausea, with the hair loss, with the vomiting, with just the horrible bone pain and just the lack of energy that are associated with chemotherapy, and you look at the percentage of people that live 5 years as a result of chemo, it's only 2.1%, you know, it's a risk-benefit analysis. What do you really want to do? Do you really want to have all of those side effects? Or as Dr. Ben Johnson mentioned last year in the Quest for the Cures, they're not side effects. They're direct effects of chemotherapy. Do you want to have those direct effects and have a 2.1% chance of living 5 years? Or would you rather just maybe try something else?
The Quest for the Cures, I've heard about that. That was a series of cancer lectures. Was that not true? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the Quest for the Cures, I was approached at the first of 2014 last year by a couple fellows, one of whom is still my partner in this venture. And they said, look, Ty, you developed a reputation over the last 8 years or so as being honest, and you know what you're talking about with cancer, and we think that there's a bigger audience of people that we need to reach that won't read your book. So we proposed this, and they proposed that I travel across the United States and do interviews with doctors and scientists and researchers and cancer patients and get their story about what they're doing to treat cancer naturally. So I did. And that was in the spring last year. We released the Quest for the Cures in the spring and just had a huge response to it. People loved it. And so then we produced another documentary in the fall last year called The Quest for the Cures Continues. I interviewed about I think I had 28 interviews in the first one. Over 50 interviews in the Quest for the Cures Continues in the fall. The response was even better than the spring, and so this year we've decided to do what we're calling The Truth About Cancer, a global quest, and in May and June and then earlier part of this month in July, I travel globally to Canada, to Mexico, to Australia, to Latvia, to United Kingdom, Spain, interview people from Russia, and I'm probably missing a few countries, but all in all, we have almost 20 countries represented. And I interviewed doctors and scientists globally to see what they're doing. And we're going to release this documentary in October this year during Breast Cancer Awareness Month so that people can actually get some truth during the propaganda that is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're going to release it in the middle of October. People want to sign up to see that for free. We do air it for free to anybody that wants to watch it for 9 days. It's 1 hour each night from 8 to 9 Eastern each night. You can go to www.thetruthaboutcancer.com and sign up to watch it for free.
This is the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with very special guest, Mr. Ty Bollinger, live on Internet Radio. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Bowser. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
I'm your host, Steve Johnson, and we're back with our guest tonight. He's an alternate cancer researcher. I should say he's a regular cancer researcher, not an alternate one, and a renowned book webmaster of the website called cancertruth.net and author of the book Cancer, Step Outside the Box. Welcome back there, Mr. Ty Bollinger, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Now, in the past, you've made a huge number of videos out there showing that there are not only ways to stop cancer, but to actually cure it. Do you think more and more people now, after 8-9 years of being on the circuit, they're starting to get the message?
Yeah, they are. They are. They really are. They're not only starting to get the message that there are natural cures out there, there are natural treatments. And, you know, when I say cures, what I really mean is that there are natural ways to restore your body to the healthy state that it takes care of cancer naturally. Because we all produce cancer each day, 10,000 to 50,000 cells at times is what I've heard, that we all produce cancer cells every day. Now, a healthy immune system, able to take control of those cancer cells and, you know, tag them, kill them, you don't ever have any kind of issues with cancer. But when that immune system's compromised, that's when cancer can take over. But I think people are not only waking up to the fact that there are many ways to restore your body to the place that it needs to be where that it does the curing, but they're also waking up to the fact that these treatments, these traditional treatments, and see, I fell into the trap there too, Steve. They're not traditional. That these toxic treatments like chemotherapy, they really don't work. And their suspicions are even raised further when you see stories like this. This doctor in Detroit. Are you familiar with the story of Dr. Farid Fattah?
No, sir.
Okay, so this guy, he's a piece of work. He's an oncologist, and he recently pled guilty and was sentenced to 45 years for prescribing chemotherapy drugs to patients that did not have cancer.
What?
Because chemotherapists, oncologists, chemotherapists, they're both one and the same. These oncologists are able to mark up the price of chemotherapy drugs, and they're able to make a tremendous amount of money on them. He had billed Medicare in something like $230-something million, of which he received over $90 million in Medicare fraud for billing for chemotherapy drugs that he was prescribing to patients that weren't even sick with cancer or that had been diagnosed with a different type of cancer. And this piece of work just got 45 years. But, you know, people, this is mainstream. This is on all of the news channels. People are seeing this, and so then now they're even more suspicious of the medical racket when they see these types of things happening.
That's unreal, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't just an isolated incident. I'm sure it happens all the time.
It does. It does. Now, this was, I've never heard of anybody that's billed Medicare for $93 million fraudulently in the past. So, you know, maybe he's the highest, but I guarantee, I know this is happening out there. It's very, very commonplace for oncologists to be prescribing chemotherapy to patients that might or might not have cancer, but they're going to go ahead and give it. Sometimes they'll give it preventatively. You know, you may have cancer, may not, but we're going to go ahead and give you a round of chemo just in case. Never mind the fact that the chemo is going to destroy your immune system, and it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't have cancer, you take chemo, you will soon.
We have a question from Klumpmeister in Alabama. Is sunscreen increasing the cancer incidence?
Is sunscreen increasing the cancer incidence? That's a great question, because what do we hear from the medical mafia? Stay out of the sun, right? I mean, that's what you hear all the time.
Because, yeah, you get burned.
Right, right. And here's the thing. My wife and I, we pretty much believe the opposite. of what we hear in the mainstream media. So you hear, stay out of the sun, we're going to think, okay, maybe we should get in the sun. Well, the bottom line is the sun provides ultraviolet B rays to our skin. That mixes with cholesterol, creates vitamin D3. Vitamin D3 prevents cancer. Now, if we block the ultraviolet B rays, then we don't produce the vitamin D3 anymore, and we don't have the preventative against cancer to start with. But not only that, the sunscreens are containing all kinds of toxic chemicals like OMC, which is oxalmethylcyanamide or something like that. I can't even remember how to pronounce it. But OMC and several other chemical ingredients in almost every sunscreen that are known carcinogens.
What?
So were you rubbing sunscreens on our skin to prevent our skin from absorbing vitamin or the ultraviolet B to mix with the cholesterol and produce vitamin D3 that can prevent cancer? And not only that, we're rubbing sunscreen on these chemicals that are actually carcinogenic. In other words, they cause cancer. Yeah, let's stay away from the sunscreens. I'm not saying that you want to go out and spend 10 hours and get fried like a lobster, but there's natural sunscreens that don't contain the carcinogenic chemicals like the OMC, like the titanium dioxide and other things that can cause cancer and cause DNA damage.
All right, we have another question. Some scientists say getting cancer is a matter of genetic bad luck. What is your opinion on that?
They need to read the studies that are put on the American Cancer Society website and the World Health Organization. And not that these are big bastions of truth, but, you know, mainstream people want to look and see, does the American Cancer Society say this? What do they say about that? Well, the fact of the matter is that if you go to the American Cancer Society's website, you can pull down a PDF document called Cancer Facts and Figures 2015. And on that, it says that only 5% of cancers are genetically linked. The other 95 are related to environmental toxicity and other lifestyle choices. So even the ACS, even the World Health Organization, they only pin about 5% of cancers due to genetics.
We have a question from Crab Fisherman in Tennessee who says, what would this guy know? He's an accountant, not a scientist. What would you say to a guy like that?
Well, you know what? I'm an accountant, and that's correct. But just because I'm an accountant doesn't mean that I can't be a scientist. And I guarantee you, I am a scientist. I'm self-taught, but I am a scientist. But that's something that somebody would throw out to try to discourage other people that maybe aren't medical doctors from doing their own research. Just because you have MD after your name, just you have medical doctor after your name, doesn't mean you know much of anything. And here's why. Medical schools were co-opted in 1910 by what was called the Flexner Report, and when John Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie teamed up with the American Medical Association to take over medical school education in the United States. And they did it through the Flexner Report. It was submitted to Congress. You can look it up, and you can see that what I'm saying is true. And as a result of the Flexner Report, what they determined was that the medical schools in the United States that were teaching sound medicine were the ones that were pushing drugs, because, you see, the Rockefellers and the Carnegies wanted to take over the drug industry. They already almost monopolized it, but they wanted all of it with their chemical companies, and they got it after the Flexner Report, because now they had an audience to sell, to push all of their chemicals, which are now called drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, on the unwitting public. That's the Flexner Report of 1910. As a result, all of the schools that taught homeopathy, that taught naturopathy, herbalism, chiropractic, all the things that have been around for millennia were pushed out of the way for drug-intensive medicine, pharmaceutical medicine that we have today. And as a result, medical school education, they only teach drugs. I mean, last year in the Quest for the Cures, I interviewed about a dozen doctors that went to medical school and asked them this particular question: how much training did you get on nutrition when you were in medical school? And the range of answers was from none to about 3 hours one day, on one afternoon, 3 hours. So they don't know anything about nutrition, which is the most important part of your health.
Wow.
So to answer the question, or to retort to that statement, just because you have somebody that has an MD after their name doesn't mean that they know a heck of a lot about health, because they're not educated about nutrition, the most important part of health, in medical school. So I think it's probably a bonus that I don't have an MD after my name, or that I don't have some kind of scientific degree. If you have a brain in your head, then you can think, and you can read, you can learn, you can make logical deductions. And all of the things that I'm talking about tonight are very logical if somebody has eyes to see and they're not completely brainwashed.
Absolutely. And if you were a medical doctor, you wouldn't be able to say that you can cure cancer.
Medical doctors can't say that they can cure cancer. They're not allowed to. And I don't say that I can cure cancer either. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm just an accountant, right? For whoever just emailed that comment. I'm just an accountant that is able to go out and read information, put it together, and present it to the public. And if it resonates with them that nutrition actually does have something to do with your health, that these herbal remedies that have been around for millennia actually do work, and they restore your body to its own natural state of homeostasis, your body is what does the curing. I don't cure. Doctors don't cure. Drugs and chemotherapy certainly don't cure. Only your body cures cancer.
Right. We have a question from Jane in California. What's your personal opinion about 9/11? Did 19 Muslim hijackers do that?
No, they didn't. 9/11, I wrote a book called Monumental Myths of the Medical Mafia, and I have a whole chapter on 9/11 in that book. But no, there's no way that was coordinated by 19 hijackers who were led by a man on dialysis in some cave on a walkie-talkie in the Middle East. There's no way that happened. I don't know how much time you want to spend on that, Steve. I know that you're very familiar with this subject, but no, there's no way that happened the way that we're told. The official story of 9/11 stinks to high heaven. And you know, I can go into some detail if you want me to, if we can continue on the cancer topic.
We have a question from MN Island in New York. Does baking soda cure cancer?
Well, what he's thinking of is a protocol that's espoused by Dr. Tullio Simoncini in Rome, Italy. And he uses baking soda or sodium bicarbonate to treat cancer. It's an antifungal, right? So it's an alkalizing agent. It does kill fungus. His theory is that cancer is not really anything more than an overgrown fungal infection, and so he treats it with baking soda in order to kill the fungal infection. He's had some success, not great results, much better than chemotherapy and radiation, though. So I would definitely opt for something like that over the standard treatment, the standard protocol. But does baking soda cure cancer? I would say what it does is it will kill fungus. It will kill fungal infections. It will alkalize the body. But I don't think it's one of the better natural treatments for cancer, no.
So it would basically balance out the body's pH level?
Yeah. It will balance the body's pH. And it will kill fungal infections. And Dr. Simoncini has had some success with it. But I think it's the reason that he's had success with it is not that baking soda kills cancer cells. I think it's really because of the fact that it will alkalinize the body and it will kill fungal infections, which may be compromising the immune system, and then the body's restored to its normal state of homeostasis, and it's able to see the cancer cells and take care of them then after the immune function is no longer impaired by the fungal infection.
Apart from yourself, who's done a massive amount of work in researching this cancer epidemic, who are some of the other researchers that you would recommend that you're interested in listening to, or some of the ones who are at the cutting edge of research at the moment?
Well, you know, one of my favorite researchers is Dr. Nicolas Gonzalez. Unfortunately, he passed away this week. He's one of the many alternative doctors that have died in the last month. He died Tuesday of a heart attack in New York City. But Nick was a good friend of mine. I interviewed him for The Quest for the Cures, and he was one of the most scientific researchers that you've ever seen. The person that commented about science here before, that I'm not a scientist, Nick was a scientist. Nick was a scientist. He had impeccable records. He reviewed the record, over 10,000 patient files of Dr. William Donald Kelly in Dallas that was treating cancer with pancreatic enzymes and detoxification procedures like coffee enemas. Nick was on a team from Columbia University in the 80s that went down there to discredit Dr. Kelly, but when he got down there and he reviewed 10,000 records, patient records, he realized that Dr. Kelly was actually curing over 90% of his patients that were supposedly terminal. And so Nick turned around to his good and said, look, this guy's actually curing cancer, and he began to be taught by Dr. Kelly, and he's employed the Kelly protocol, the enzyme protocol for cancer, for the last 30 years. Unfortunately, he died this last week.
Goodness me. With all the research that you've done on GMOs, on the way that they've kept us down with this Orwellian 1984 police state, with the way that things are going as far as world governments are taking over with more power and more power according to their security regime and agenda, do you consider that what we're living on is the living embodiment of one big slave plantation on planet Earth? Do you think that that's beyond the realms of possibility?
No, I don't. I mean, that's. I think that's actually the goal for those that we would think of as the global elites, which I think of as the global cockroaches. But those that are kind of controlling the things behind the scenes, I think that's the goal, is to kind of have a prison planet, in the way that Alex Jones puts it, with a bunch of slaves. I really do think that's the goal. GMOs are one of the many ways that they're keeping us sick. GMOs are not healthy. They are not needed to feed the world, and they do cause cancer. The Seralini study showed that. If you don't believe that, you can just go read about it, the Seralini study. And the only difference between the Seralini studies and those studies that Monsanto had been doing to prove that their GMOs were safe is the fact that the Seralini study carried the GMOs, they fed the GMOs to the mice for 2 years when Monsanto stopped feeding them GMO corn at about 90 days, and they stopped the study. The rats didn't start getting the tumors till about 120 days. That's the only difference in the studies. So they do cause cancer. They do cause premature death. They do cause sterility. The studies have shown that. And we are one big experiment now with the GMOs. And it's not only the GMOs. It's the fluoride in the water. It's the vaccinations. It's all of the different ways that we're being systematically poisoned on a daily basis.
When I consider the cost of your book, which is, I believe, from Amazon, is about $29.95, very, very cheap. If anyone wants to check that out, Cancer Step Outside the Box by Ty Bollinger, fantastic book. I recommend it highly. When I compare that price, $30, compared to the cost of chemotherapy, compared to the cost of your average radiation treatment, compared to the cost of your average surgery, which is what they're going to put you through, compared to the cost of all the other drugs and pills and treatments and medicines and tablets that they give you, isn't $30 not much to spend to find out that there's more alternatives than going down the mainstream path of getting chopped up and boiled and pumped full of government drugs?
It's a lot cheaper, Steve. And I appreciate the kudos about the book. But, you know, people want to buy the book. It's got a lot of good information that's all there for you. But if you don't want to buy the book, that's fine. The information's out there. One of the articles that I just read today was going over the outrageous cost of chemotherapy drugs. It's funny that you mentioned that. The most expensive drug. I was on an interview on Coast to Coast a couple of years ago, and a man called in and he said that we were talking about chemotherapy drugs, and I said, from what I know that there's a experimental chemotherapy that costs $50,000. And he called in and he said, well, actually, my mother was just on an experimental chemotherapy, cost $70,000 for just a dose or two, and he said she died in 14 days after being given this, and she wasn't even sick when she went in. She went into a GP and a general practitioner. Just for her annual physical, he found cancer. She had no symptoms, no symptoms, but they started her on this experimental chemo because you got to start treatment tomorrow or you're going to die, and she died in 2 weeks, and she died from the chemotherapy. But that was $70,000. This article that I read today, there's a chemotherapy drug called ipilimumab by Bristol-Myers Squibb, and it is $120,000.
Wow.
The number two most expensive chemotherapy drug is Cipulacel T, $90,000 for three doses. Oh, you get three doses for $90,000. Okay. There is a drug called Bevacizumab, $90,000. Paclitaxel, $80,000. And the list goes on and on. There's one down here, another one for $120,000. Ofanumab, $120,000. I'd say that's a little bit more expensive than buying a $30 book or buying a $10 or $15 package of supplements, vitamin D, that a Creighton University study showed that vitamin D in proper doses can prevent 77% of cancers. You can get a good bottle of D3 for about $15, or you can go out and get it in the sun for free, as long as you don't use the sunscreen that causes cancer.
Now, if somebody wanted to get your book and they wanted to download it straight away, is there a possibility for a Kindle version or a PDF that they can pay how much for?
Yeah, there's a PDF version. It's cancertruth.net. You can go to get the PDF version. I think it's like $25, maybe $20. Awesome. I don't remember. It's been so long since I've looked at it.
Fantastic. Division of the People is really what this is all about, to keep people divided amongst themselves, divided amongst their opinions about cancer, divided amongst religion and culture. Do you see that that's one of the biggest problems we face today, is division of the people?
Oh, yeah, I think it most certainly is. I mean, you know, when we look politically, there is not a hill of beans difference between the Republicrats and the Demopublicans right here in the United States. They're all the same. But they give us a few of these topics that we can argue about and debate so that we feel like that we're different. But the bottom line is that whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, and I'm speaking generally here, those that are in office are controlled by the same people. They just kind of give us these little issues to fight about and bicker about so that we stay distracted and we stay divided, because united we stand, divided we fall. They want to keep us divided, and that we don't realize that they're all the same. You know, we look at the Bushes and the Clintons and Barack Obama and that family. Look, they may hate each other on TV screen, and they may criticize each other publicly, but they go vacation together in the off season when they're not. It's almost like a World Wrestling Federation event when you see a political rally. You know, it's like, you know, it's scripted. You know, it's not real. You know that behind the scenes that, you know, Akbar the Barbarian and the Incredible, the Ultimate Warrior, they're really friends. But they hate each other in the ring. And that's the same way that politicians are doing today. You know, they're all controlled by the same people. And those same people are the ones that want global governance, that want us to be a dumbed-down prison planet.
I've seen on your website that there's a lot of testimonials. Now, these are basically showing people that have read your book, that have followed your treatments or followed the ideas that you've put in your book and have actually come out of it, beating cancer, surviving, getting on with their lives. This is some of the best stuff as far as statistics that your book actually works. But one thing I don't see on your website, you don't sell water filters. You don't sell first aid emergency kits. What's up with that? How come you're not into the water filter game like Alex Jones yet?
I'm not into, I don't really sell anything on the website other than the book. And to be honest, if people don't have $20 to download the PDF, or if they want a printed copy, I'll mail it to them for free. And since I published the book, I have actually mailed over 10,000 books to people that don't have the money. So I'm definitely not in this for the money. If I were, I'm not doing a very good job. But no, I don't like to hawk stuff on the website. Not that there's anything wrong with selling good products, but I just choose not to.
And what sort of feedback have you got from Cancer Step Outside the Box? I know you get mails every day from people who have read the book. What are they basically saying to you?
Yeah, you know, people, it's really humbling. As many of the places that I've spoken over the last couple of years, I'll get people that will come up and say, you know, your book saved my life. I read it, and I didn't want to, something about chemo just didn't resonate with me, and I tried hemp oil, or I tried hyperthermia, or ozone therapy, or whatever it might be, Life One therapy, Hoxie, whatever's in the book. And I'm alive now, and there's no more cancer in my body, and thank you for saving my life, which is really humbling, because I didn't save their life. I mean, I didn't develop these treatments. I just researched them and put them in a book. You know, there's medical geniuses and scientists that have developed these treatments. You know, many of these treatments are put together by brilliant people, even Nobel Prize winners that develop these treatments. I'm just the mouthpiece that communicates to people that they have options, and here's some of your options. But, you know, they're not really my treatments per se. I'm not all that smart.
Can you tell us what the most memorable experience over the years in the work you've done thus far?
You know, I think probably the most memorable experience has been last year when we filmed The Quest for the Cures and we released that documentary. And then this year I went to speak in San Diego at the Integrative Health Conference. And this was after last year that we had released two documentaries and literally had hundreds of people that came up and said, hey, we watched your documentary last year. It was the best thing I've ever seen on cancer. I sent it to all my friends. It saved my life, or it saved my mom's life, or whatever. That was really the most. I remember coming back from that conference and was just overwhelmed at the sheer number of people that have watched the documentary and had their life changed because of it. That's really what it's all about to me. It's just to impart knowledge to people, to impact their lives, to educate them about cancer, about the real options for cancer, and to expose the liars, because those people that are pushing chemo on you as your best option, they are liars, period.
That is not the best option.
Mr. Bollinger,
final question. Do you support the stop funding of Israel?
Absolutely, I do. 100%, Steve.
Fabulous. You've been listening to the People Who Speak radio show with special guest Mr. Ty Bollinger. I'd like to thank him and remind all the listeners to visit his website at www.cancertruth.net or listen to him on the archives on his YouTube channel. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mr. Bollinger.
Steve, thanks for having me, brother. Keep up the good work.
God bless you. It's good to hear you. Join us coming up soon on the People Who Speak radio show when we talk with Webster Tarpley in September. Stay tuned for some big interviews coming up soon. Big thanks go out to the producers, Mike and Donald, to all my friends throughout the world, and to all the guys who've given BBS such great support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune into my own channel on YouTube called Stop Funding Israel, but for me for now, take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters.